Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Life Health Trust. Today, we're talking about burnout. It's been more than 15 months since most employees at engineering firms switched to remote work, and many of them are still there. One of the impacts from this sudden change in how we work has been employee burnout, with many finding it difficult to strike the proper work-life balance. This is a big issue for engineering firms because high-performing employees tend to be more susceptible to burnout, and they can become disengaged and end up leaving the firm for greener pastures. To talk with us today about how to reverse burnout is Peter Atherton, who is president of Actions Prove LLC. Peter has presented a program for ACEC on burnout and has a book that's available on Amazon titled Reversing Burnout. And in a previous life, he was a principal and owner of an engineering firm. So Peter, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So in some recent surveys, about 50% of respondents say burnout is a legitimate concern, and about 50% say it's an epidemic. If that's the case, are we just talking about burnout, or is there something bigger that we're dealing with here?
And I think we're definitely talking about something bigger. And that data, 50%. Of respondents to polls thinking that burnout was a legitimate concern and 50% thinking it's an epidemic, that's actually grown. When I first started taking that poll, when I spoke at conferences and different events, speaking to a mixed leaders, practitioners, managers, or leaders overall, it used to be 80 to 90% said it's a legitimate concern, but there was some less than 10% on either ends, either it's an epidemic or it's really being overblown. Nobody in my polls that I come across says it's being overblown, and it is moving into half legitimate concern, half epidemic. And in fact, I was with an ACEC chapter of emerging professionals, and we had a very similar poll. Like, what's your standing today? How do you feel? Over 50% of our emerging professionals, 25-year-olds to 35-year-olds, said that they were burned out or overwhelmed. Another 20% on top of that thought they were disengaged. There was another 10% who was like, we're just unsure of the future. There was only 16% of that poll that said, hey, I'm feeling pretty good. Things are on track and I'm just waiting to accelerate. So there's a bigger thing happening in our industry. But even if we step out of our industry, mid last year or mid 2019 pre-pandemic, I mean, the World Health Organization came out and they had redefined what burnout was, and they had recategorized it as a workplace phenomenon. So I think it's definitely moved within our industry and even broader than our industry and the workplace in general to be something that's just much bigger, not an individual thing, but also kind of a workplace organizational thing too.
Did COVID-19, did the pandemic accelerate it, or did it stay steady, or what happened with the pandemic?
I can say it definitely changed it. I think in some pockets it has worsened, and in some pockets people have taken things into their own hands and they have sort of decreased. If I think about it from an increased perspective, I mean, we've seen anecdotally, and I think in firms, certainly the firms that I work with, workloads have increased, workloads have shifted. There's been new burdens that have been placed on leaders and managers and everyone, I guess, practitioners in addition to that. One of the phenomena that we've been dealing with that just kind of manifests itself more so recently, because we have such a turnover in the industry and new people coming in and such a growth pressures, is we don't really do a good job programming for teaching and training and development and coaching and mentoring and delegation, and our overall efficiency and knowledge transfer and responsibility transfer has not been as good as some other industries. And I think in COVID, when we grow and we get promoted, we really don't drop things. And so I think from an individual level and within organizations, there's a lot of burdens. And I think you know, and from an organizational level, we really haven't thought about how to strategically make sure that we're leveraging all of the knowledge and moving it into the places where we have capacity to free up our leaders and managers to sort of look at some of the organizational development pieces. So I think that has been really exposed by COVID, that some of those inefficiencies. That being said, there are a number of individuals that are out there that really have learned to set better boundaries, designing more of their ideal days, their ideal weeks, disengaging by design, which from an organizational perspective, we don't like. I mean, because they're just choosing to do it differently. Whereas from an organizational perspective, we could design things to do things better. And so there really is the idea of this whole great recession or great resignation happening. There are some people who are taking it into their own hands to sort of prepare for that because there are firms that are offering more opportunities along with work-life balance. And I say that is enticing for a lot of folks versus just sort of the talk of work-life balance, but how do I have the opportunities and be able to balance thing? It's an individual component, but there's also an organizational component that firms can take more of a leadership role in.
You mentioned mentorship. I would imagine that in a remote work environment, mentoring is very difficult. And I would think that mentoring would be a strong way to help your staff stay engaged.
I mean, I think mentoring can happen, you know, whether you're on a video screen or not, right? So mentoring is about relationships and really transferring knowledge. You know, somebody's interested in item X, you have knowledge in item X, and you just transfer that knowledge. And so you can have a relationship, you can meet for coffee, or you could meet over Zoom. I think it's the effort and the building the relationship that's the key. I mean, as it relates to junior staff that really need the incidental contact. Training and developing staff, technically, there really is a benefit to be able to be in the same office. But we found that it doesn't have to be. There's just certainly you can accelerate some growth and be able to have that. So I don't know. I think that's we haven't done it in the past. It's somewhat of an excuse factor. How do we do if we couldn't come in the office, how would we make it work? We could figure that out and we largely did. But now that we're coming to a place where we can come in the office, how do we optimize it? Because the time and efficiency of getting together over Zoom or MS Teams is going to be better in a lot of ways. But we also want to capitalize on when we do have time together, we're not wasting that. And so that gets into some of the organizational redesign and the thinking of how to redesign work to maximize those opportunities because we can get together now. But mentoring is absolutely key to that. It is relationship-based and it's about, you know, caring about someone's growth and development, having a growth and development plan. You know, the individual needs to know where they want to go and the person with the knowledge has to be interested in helping them get there. So there are many different components to that. If there's interest in caring, people can make time and use any medium to really have results. It's just a matter of how do we optimize those results?
You mentioned time during your program that you did for us a few weeks ago, you mentioned a point which I hadn't thought of, which I found very interesting, which was that employees during COVID have had a long time to think about what they really want out of their work and their life. And many people have redefined winning to meaning winning both at work and at life, sort of that classic work-life balance thing. Are firms catching up with this reality and what are they doing about it?
Have they caught up? I think the answer is no, but they're getting there. I think they generally realize that it's a thing. And it's not just the thing that talent wants. It's not just the thing their managers want. It's what they want too. It's just, there's been a lot of leaders and I had this myself when I was a principal and major owner of a firm. I created my own balance. I kind of set the rules. I knew what jobs I wanted to go after. I knew how I wanted to schedule my day and build the team. So I had more sort of control and freedom in that sense. People within our organizations don't have that. So there's sometimes a little bit of disconnect because leaders have some degree of work-life balance. I mean, because they have some control, but That being said, I still think there is, even though there's more acknowledgement of it, there is still a disconnect in practice. And again, I mean, with some of the, you can see this manifesting, the disconnect. So what are some of the sort of the statistics today? I mean, I get this when I talk with leaders and managers and practitioners and firms, but there is the overall talk of the great resignation that I mentioned. Just a few months ago, LinkedIn and Microsoft had their workplace index report, where 40% of employees across industries reported that they were looking to change jobs in 6 to 12 months. And over half of them was because they figured out that they could work remotely and have some work-life balance. So it's out there. And there's the sort of the growing shift of people moving into the emerging world of independent professional freelancers, all about having more control over what they want to do, the type of work, the hours they work, their availability. So I think it's manifest, the actions are people are ready to move. So I think there has been a disconnect, and firms haven't closed the loop yet to say, we know that we've just come through COVID. We know that you're looking for this. Here are some tangible things that we're doing right now. We're not ignoring this. We're not just providing it, you know, sort of lip service. We're investing in change. We're digging in. We're recognizing this as a great opportunity to sort of redefine work, redefine how we want to do it in our organization, and increase that awareness. And so we want to talk to you about that. We want to figure out what is going to work, what is going to create the type of environment you want to be in. Some firms are doing that, not all of them, and not enough, which is why there is sort of this concern with what will happen over the next 6 to 12 months.
If we were to take that down to just a personal level, just to a single individual, you make it the point that top performers are often the ones most likely to suffer from burnout, but that it's not like a light switch. It doesn't just happen one day. They don't go from being fine to burning out. It's a process that they go through. How can a firm spot early on that someone is on the path towards burnout and take tangible steps to actually stop that?
Well, I think that the first item that you mentioned is recognition that it is going to be our top performers who do burnout. It's the people who are most dedicated to the craft, dedicated to the organization, and putting the most in over time. So that's the key. When we see people, so to answer your question of how do we recognize it? If we know that there is a high performer who is working unusually long hours continuously every year, season after season, even for decades, it's going to end a certain way. So we need to recognize that and intervene, right? Everyone's got different thresholds, but we're not machines. And so that's one recognition. When we see someone who was a high performer performing less or disengaging more, not asking for that next assignment, you can see signs, and we have the cadence of who our people are, and we can recognize that. So I think that's a key aspect. But when we recognize that's a key thing. So, but without the recognition of it, we're not really going to be proactive to prevent that. And if we do, I mean, we will get more and more leaders and managers who disengage, because that's ultimately one of the results of burnout. It's that unconscious or conscious reaction to disengage. And it's particularly worse when a leader or a manager disengages, because everyone below them in the organization will feel that, right? So the people who are, you know, tasked with and do the most, have the most influence in inspiring and engaging everyone in an organization, if they're not inspired or engaged themselves, or worse, they're burned out, we're not going to have a positive effect in our organization. Or versus staying in the organization, they're just going to leave. And they could just leave and leave the industry, which isn't good. Or they can just leave and start their own firms. And so it is ultimately, if somebody's burned out, it's going to lead to disengagement or leaving those organizations.
And when they are burned out, what can you do to bring them back? Can you bring them back?
You can certainly bring them back. you know, one of the things that, I mean, I guess the recognition too, is that often it takes a while to get there, right? In my case, it was close to 20 years. In other people's cases, it's a lot less than that, right? So it's going to take some time to bring people back. I mean, with understanding that it's the process to get there, it's a process to get back with the right interventions. And sometimes you need the outside perspective because you're in the pickle jar, right? So you can't really see the individual concern. We can't really see all the factors that are at play. And the organization itself, without some outside perspective, might not be able to sort of change what they're doing to create the situation that will reverse and prevent burnout moving forward without that outside knowledge, because the systems and the context are in place, right? So it's hard to do something different when you don't recognize that that these are the things that you need to change organizationally. And the one thing too, to recognize from the mechanics of burnout, that often with professionals, it starts with prolonged work overload. But when we get to the point of burnout, there's other frustrations in place. There's a series of work-related, maybe culture work-related frustrations. There's personal frustrations that come into play, maybe even some resentments about work on a personal side. So even if we were to remove the workload, there's still a number of other elements at play that individually we have to be aware of, and organizationally we have to be aware of, if we want to be able to sort of bring people back. And, you know, some of the things that are being done is, and this is happening in my leadership and management development work, and this is happening even in strategic planning, really talking about what burnout is, what burnout isn't, what's the difference between burnout and overwhelm, and how do we create the processes and systems so it doesn't happen? Because we want to be high achieving, sustainable over the long term. We don't want to burn out. That's such a misuse of assets and resources, right? People having 50-year careers now. Why would we burn them out in 3 or 10? I mean, it doesn't make sense. But now with COVID, with some of the major changes I mentioned, like with the World Health Organization, people are willing to talk about it now, different than even just a few years ago. Firms are bringing in some outside resources. They're giving their executives and high potentials opportunities to have executive coaches. There's even firms, some of the more progressive firms out there are developing formal sabbatical programs where they're looking like our senior talent, we want them to take time off. We want them to reflect on their careers after 20 years, after 30 years, because they're going to come back better. And we can also design that in such a way we have team and organizational development associated with when that principal steps away for a little bit, the whole team rises to the challenge. And we plan that 6 months, a year ahead of time. And there's marketplace opportunities because who doesn't want to work for a firm that has that type of sustainability baked into the cake? And the opportunities always to grow without a crisis. And so a recruitment perspective, clients, I've been in client interviews where they want to know what's your succession plans. How can you guarantee that your key staff aren't going to leave the organization? So it's just, you know, I don't know if it's a matter of time, but there are clients who are sort of stepping up to say, what is your sustainability plan? What is your succession planning look like? So those are some of the things that to recognize, prevent it or reverse it if it has happened, right? Be real about it. But then what are we going to do to prevent things moving forward from escalating to that level?
I mean, there's also the challenge, though, that as we come out of COVID, that the pandemic, the economy started picking up, that engineering firms are going to start working more, that the infrastructure package is moving along through Congress. So they're actually going to get more busy. At the same time, the labor shortage in our industry continues to accelerate. So how do firms deal with the situation in which they actually need their people to work harder?
Right. Well, I think we work smarter. I think there's going to be there's going to be a little bit of a reckoning. I think number one, we have to work to build the capacity of our people, right? The technical capacity, the people skills capacity. We have to learn how to better delegate, better and train and develop, accelerate that training and development process, better workflow design, processes and systems, you know, workload management, better tools, time blocking. How to get into flow, how to redesign our days. I mean, there are some things to build capacity right now. But I would say if there are firms who haven't recently, or aren't currently updating their strategic plans or strategic planning for the first time, good luck. I mean, I think that there really is, this is the need to strategically plan. We have so many things at play and changing right now that this is a major opportunity for firms to reinvest in the future, to think about the future differently while the going is good. I mean, it's a good crisis. We have too much work. We don't have enough people. I mean, so would we rather redesign things in a crisis when we don't have enough work? I mean, so as owners, we're sort of recapitalizing the company as we're hoping that work comes in. So, I mean, there are ways that we can think about this. I mean, but I think a lot of firms through the strategic planning process too, will have to think about what is our mission, vision, and values? What is our ideal work? What is our ideal client type? Let's get more of them and not just sort of diversity at all costs or diversity with no plan. So we're doing a lot of different things that we're doing for the first time. And we can't develop a process and system around there. We can't really train people about it. Our senior people have to be involved with that type of work. We can't really delegate that to other levels in our organization. So without that type of visioning and positioning, I think it's going to be hard for a lot of firms because they might just take on more and it's going to be so hard to digest. And I think the firms that have clarity over mission, vision, this is the type of work, this is the expertise we have, this is the system to get you to where you need to be because this is where we're going, I think they will thrive. And so putting in the work with strategic planning, I think that's going to be a differentiator so that you can actually pick the food you want and easily digest it or more easily digest it.
As you said, working smarter, not harder. And finally, you mentioned values, and something else you mentioned in your program, which I found interesting, was that in the past, people sort of went through a career progression in which, at the end of their careers, they wanted to be doing something where they made a difference to society or to their industry. But now, with the millennials and the Gen Zs, they want to make a difference right off the bat. How does that impact burnout and what can firms do to meet this difference?
Yeah, that's great point. I mean, as it relates to making a difference and having an impact, right? That is the newer professionals coming in, as you mentioned, that's baked in the cake, and a lot of the Gen Xers and baby boomers are there. Like, we really want to make a difference. And there's a lot of convergence. So from an organizational development strategy perspective, if we can talk and articulate about the difference we're making through our projects, I think that's a big element right there that we can capitalize on because we are an industry that truly makes a difference. I mean, our work matters, public health, safety, welfare, all of that. We don't always do a good job articulating that. And I think there is a switch, but the shift has been slower in some organizations than others, where we're actually talking about the benefits that we have. And as it relates to sort of on-the-job training, I think we can bring people along so much quicker. And this is an extreme example, but if it's, hey, put your head down and do this work, and then in a little while, I'll have you put your head down and do this other type of work. And then at the end, you know, 10 years from now, I'll show you what you did. I mean, I think we can bring people along so much more in an engaging way about what we're doing, being transparent about this is the client, this is the client goals. What are some ways that you think we can get better at this? What are some innovative ways? And so not just sort of delegating work, but kind of working, teaching along the way. I think that's going to allow our profession in particular to bring along a generation where we're making a difference through our work. But the other component that when I work with organizations and speak with professionals, even though that we're doing really important work and great work, there's a desire for what are we doing outside of the work that we get paid to do? I mean, how do we invest our knowledge as engineers or as engineers and architects and environmental planners, whatever the mix of our organization is, how do we make a difference beyond that work that we're paid for? And so how do we, as problem solvers, get into some of the major community opportunities and ultimately leverage what I call our stage, which is our skills, talents, assets, gifts, and experiences, not just in our work through our projects and our organization, but outside of our organizations. And so that's a key part. That's part of the vision and the mission some firms have that are very attractive to all types of, you know, whether someone's in mid-career or someone's entering the profession. But I think that that is a key point. People do want to know that their work matters. And that's actually one component of burnout too, that if somebody is feeling overwhelmed and it leads to the point of exhaustion and burnout, one of the key aspects that adds to that is the loss of efficacy, and that they're feeling that the work that they do, even if from the outside someone says, oh my goodness, that's incredible work. I can't believe you're creating potable water. Oh, you have these types of buildings, these types of transportation systems. Internally, you feel like the work doesn't matter or you don't love it anymore. And so sometimes getting out of our day-to-day, learning how to mentor somebody, looking at a work from a different perspective, or investing in a community side, using, you know, sort of our stage individually in a different context, we can learn to love our work again. And so that is part of the process. But I think if we've lost that sort of feeling that our work matters, I think we have to recapture it, because we are professionals who just make a profound impact on society. And when we don't have it, that contributes to feeling burned out and maybe I need to make a change.
Yeah, sort of like being in the pickle jar again. It's like you don't realize what good you do because you're just too focused on the day-to-day.
Right.
Well, I think that's a good place to end. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Great. Well, it's been a joy to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
And you can find his book on Amazon. It's titled Reversing Burnout. And you've been listening to the Engineering Influence podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Life Health Trust. Thanks for listening.